As physical therapists, we're a lot more powerful than sometimes we think. It's not unusual for me to think big about what it is that we can do. And though it might seem surprising that we can have a huge impact on climate change, in fact, it is well in keeping and a good match for our knowledge and skill sets.
Great show for you today. We have Rose Pignatero. Rose had a presentation at Next and an article in PT in Motion about two things that maybe you don't think of as being associated together: physical therapy and climate change. Where do they come together? We get into that in this episode of PT Podcast, brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs, giving you certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it. Find them online at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting.
This is
the PT Pinecast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Welcome to PT Pinecast. They say the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Another episode on the show today. Want to remind people to share it. That's the only way we get other people to find out about the program. It is free, always will be free, on iTunes, on Google Podcasts, and now on Spotify. You can check us out there. The only way we ask you to repay us is maybe just tell a friend or tell a colleague at PT Pinecast on all the social channels. Today, we bring in no stranger to the show, Rose Pignatero. Rose, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Jimmy.
Last time we talked to you, we were at National Student Conclave, Miami.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A couple of years ago. Remind the audience, Rose, you're a physical therapist, but you also have a fun background because you've got some other things in your history. What is it?
Well, I've been a physical therapist for about 28 years. I'm currently the director of the physical therapy program at Adventist Health, University of Health Sciences in Orlando. My background is in physical therapy primarily. And then after many years of practice, I decided to go back to graduate school and get a PhD in public health.
So kind of a really a good intersection of two things that can help with those that we seek to treat. And you're applying both of those degrees. And I was cruising through PT in Motion and I saw this headline and it grabbed my eye because I couldn't understand how these things intersected. And just for the audience's reference, it was in the September issue of PT in Motion. And the headline was "Climate Change Called the Primary Threat to Population Health." And I'm thinking, wait, what? So then I dug into it. In the first paragraph, a familiar name to the show, having you on the program a while ago, I said, well, I got to get to the bottom of this. So Rose, climate change, primary threat to population health. What?
That's not something that I came up with on my own. It's actually something that's been advocated for by the American Public Health Association and various medical associations, other healthcare practitioners. It's not something that we commonly think about in physical therapy, but with our focus on health promotion and prevention, it really is something that we should start to think about and integrate into our treatment plans, into our interactions with the public, and even in our efforts towards advocacy.
So when I reached out to you, Rose, about jumping on the show and kind of getting to the bottom of this and just, you know, hearing some more of your insight about climate change and population health, you suggested that I bring on some other people. We've got them on hold. So who are we going to be talking to?
Sarah Blanton is a physical therapist with Emory's program and in physical therapy, and she's joining us with some of her students. Sarah and I met at the annual physical therapy conference in June here in Orlando, and we shared our interests in climate change and global warming and environmental sustainability and some of the efforts that the PT students have initiated at Emory.
All right, Sarah, welcome to the show and your students. Introduce yourself first, and then we'll have the students introduce themselves.
All right. So I'm an associate professor at Emory University in their Division of Physical Therapy. And I had spent 10 years working in the clinic in neuro rehab and shifted over in 2000 actually to do some research with Steve Wolf on the Excite clinical trial. And that led to faculty position and then my own line of research around caregiving and stroke. But in 2014, I was introduced, and I can talk about it more later, but some of these interests of sustainability and more of what the broader university at Emory is doing around sustainability and sustainable concepts. So much of what we've done here has really been connected to efforts of students. And so Eric and Sean have been amazing with that, and I'll let them introduce.
My name's Eric Holzhauser, and I'm actually an engineer. Was my first career, and so I did a lot of lead projects, which is leadership and environmental and engineering design. So kind of got the sustainability background there, and then found, I would say, my true passion was in physical therapy, and I started about a year and a half ago in physical therapy school. So this sustainability initiatives in our program is kind of a way for me to marry my previous career with my new career.
I'm down with taking your old career and adding it to your new career. I like that a lot, my man. Yeah, and who else we got?
My name is Sean Resigue, also here at Emory University. I'm in my second year, and I joined Eric and Dr. Bland here to work on our sustainability committee, because I really think sustainability is much more than just recycling, and really we got to tie in the wellness, the nutrition, and the social component as well. So that's where my interest lies, and that's why I'm here.
All right. So I'll take a quote from the September 2018 PT Motion article that we're referencing. In the U.S., climate change is estimated to result annually and an additional $14 billion in healthcare costs. That's 760,000 related healthcare encounters and nearly 1,700 deaths. How does it directly affect that? Where does it come into play? It's probably obvious, but I'm not seeing it right off the bat. So who wants to take this one first?
So some of it comes from natural disasters. And here in Florida, we actually just saw this. We had a major hurricane up in the Panhandle, Hurricane Matthew. And so you have deaths and injuries from those types of natural disasters, the flooding that happens, the severe storms that happen as a result of climate change. Some of it's related to extreme temperatures, either extreme hot and extreme cold. And sometimes people get mixed up because we call it global warming, but it is actually climate change. So the extremes of temperatures on either end can be really detrimental to people's health. The other thing that we need to keep in mind is not only the environmental temperature, but the air quality. So anybody, there are populations that are more vulnerable than others. For example, older adults, small children. And then you have people with pulmonary conditions, cardiovascular conditions, anything that's going to make it more challenging for them to breathe or move around if the temperature outside is not really good for us.
Sarah, what do you have to add?
So when I was first introduced to sustainability here at Emory, it was through a really amazing program called the Piedmont Project. And we were put together with we had a retreat where several faculty members from across campus, from the liberal arts to health sciences, came together, and we thought about these broader concepts of what sustainability means, and understanding that climate change is one piece of that larger puzzle. And so when I was thinking about those concepts, how it fits into PT, we had actually just finished up a national symposium on childhood obesity, and thinking about, well, gosh, as I'm working with these individuals, as we were thinking about, say, in that particular case, how to address childhood obesity, you can't begin to do it unless you understand the person in the context of their environment, right? So if I'm trying to create an exercise program for an individual and for a child, but they don't have an access to playgrounds, right? Or their mom works two jobs and doesn't have time to cook, and all she has time to do is run by McDonald's on the way home, then we've missed that nutritional piece as well, right? So if I need to look at that person, I know that exercise and nutrition are important pieces of their health and wellness. But if I don't understand the environmental constraints and the context behind that, then I've missed a large piece of that puzzle. Or if I think about, you know, my area of focus in stroke, it's if I'm going to give a home program to an individual and have them do a walking program at home, but they don't have sidewalks in their neighborhood. I think that was really part of my initial push and fascination around it. But then also understanding, when you're stepping back in this, you know, this concepts of sustainability, like Sean said, it's beyond recycling. And even those important pieces, they're ethical considerations when we're teaching about healthcare policy and the environment. I'm asking, you know, we're asking students to maybe create their what a clinic would look like. Do we also need to think about sustainable concepts of building design and materials we use? So, or think about access to nutrition and how to educate our patients and students around that. So my real passion came from seeing all these fascinating connections and this ubiquity of these concepts of sustainability, but really thinking about how does teaching students about these concepts help them in broader complex problem solving and interdisciplinary collaboration, those ways of creative solutions and seeing connections that aren't readily apparent. That's been the real draw for me, to be able to see how does that impact our pedagogy in a broader sense, and using it as a vehicle for engagement and empowerment, because everything that I've done, it may have been an idea that began to percolate, but when the rubber met the road, it's because of the work of the students really driving that and their initiative.
That sounds good. As you were going through those examples, Sarah, I really started to think how many times in school and in clinical practice I used, you know, the phrase patient's environment, but really I meant like, you know, in their house, and I guess that word environment clearly has a bigger meaning. And you need to think about that. Like, is the person's environment conducive to that home exercise program that you just prescribed for them? Is it a good idea for them to be outside if they live in an area with poor air quality? Do they not have sidewalks? You know, as you pointed out, and then you started to you know, at the end of your answer, you started to talk about, you know, sustainability in terms of, you know, if you're going to build a clinic, you know, is it going to be compliant with being able to be a positive impact on the environment in the community in which it is placed? And I know, you know, you guys have a background in engineering. That's got to be land pretty close to your heart when you hear discussions by physical therapists having engineering and architectural conversations.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's huge. When you talk about all these different connections from things and building a community and physical therapists being movement science experts, you know, we should be in the conversation of how we design our buildings and cities. And you look at new technology coming in with, you know, potentially autonomous vehicles and flying cars and stuff like that, which could have the impact of making us more sedentary.
Sure.
Or they could have the impact of allowing us to move more freely and be healthier. I think both physical therapists and engineers, architects, there's a lot, if we can get all of us in the same room talking about these things, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah.
I was really excited when Eric came, you know, expressed his interest in what we were doing, because, you know, he comes to the table, you know, with this different way of thinking as an engineer would think, and systems thinking. And I was like, and the models he's begun to create around what this may look like were really exciting. And I thought, here's finally sort of, you know, part of that. And then also hearing Rose's perspective at the annual conference. I mean, I was thrilled to hear, you know, where she, her work around that and understanding this background in public health and how to pull these things and these strengths together to really relook at things in an innovative way.
Yeah. In the article, Rose actually is quoted as saying, I didn't become a physical therapist to become a political advocate, but it is that now one of my responsibilities? And then your answer was yes, you know, it now is. And, you know, as you alluded to, getting everybody in the room, and I'm using air quotes, we advocate. If we're not in the room, there's no chance that, you know, an urban planner or an architect is ever going to even think about the lens that we view things at. So we need to be at least conscious enough that you do need to be that advocate so you can get into that room. From an urban planning perspective, I've heard of, you know, the term walkability, you know, but when you're doing urban plan, making it walkable, what other things should we pay attention to and advocate if by chance we're lucky enough to get into a room or to bend someone's ear who's an urban planner, besides just making sure things distance-wise, having access to sidewalks? What are some other things that we should advocate for to make sure that they're in the environments of our clients?
I think there's a couple things. The first thing that comes to mind is transportation systems. There's been a lot of research on transit systems and the impact on public health. That can be a very big thing. There's research that areas that have good transit systems have lower rates of diabetes, obesity, heart disease, all of those things, because people tend to walk to the train station or the bus station.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. And the other thing is creating environments that are attractive for people to be outside. So parks and campuses that that encourage, you know, have, you know, artistic features that encourage people to go out and be active. Water, people tend to congregate around water and water features and stuff like that, and that those are opportunities for not only people to be more physically active, but also to connect, to connect socially. So I think those are both big
and
things.
And thinking about just sort of immediately when we're reflecting on his comments is when we're therapists talking to our patients and we're trying to explore, not just be prescriptive and say, you need to be walking 30 minutes a day, but let's talk about how do you get to work and do you take transportation or are there ways in which you can park to get in extra walking time or how close is the nearest park? So how do we do that collaborative problem solving, you know, about these exercise programs within their environment and give them some ideas that maybe they didn't necessarily think of?
Yeah, all I heard you say there, Sarah, was lifestyle change. How do you make this, how do you make this a lifestyle change? Because if you can do that, that's better than trying to fit in a 30-minute walk if you can get someone to walk to and from work a couple days a week or maybe, you know, every day if that urban planning, if that is planned properly, making it conducive to actually doing that. And now you bring the environment back in, which is really where this article originally kind of confused me. If you get people using more mass transit systems, less cars, biking and walking more, I'm going to take a stab here. I don't want to put any words in anybody's mouth. I'm guessing the environment benefits from that.
Yeah, that's really the beauty of it, Jimmy, is that if you look at this from a health promotion perspective, you have the best of both worlds. If we are using more active forms of transportation, we get people out there, they're biking, they're walking, it really becomes integrated and part of their daily routine rather than segregated as an exercise program. We're reducing things like hypertension, cerebrovascular disease, heart disease, diabetes, but at the same time, we're also reducing the amount of carbon emissions, and that helps to address the issues that stem from climate change.
What were you guys going to say too? You guys were going to add something.
Yeah, and to build off that, I think there's such a good opportunity for physical therapists. You know, you talk about how the climate affects our health, but, you know, our health and well-being also affects our environment. And there's statistics that a lot of the, you know, greenhouse gases and pollution actually comes from the healthcare sector itself. So if people are healthier, if they're more active, their hospital visits will be shorter. They'll be less reliant on pharmaceuticals. And when you look at the data, pharmaceuticals and hospital stays are actually two of the largest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions in the healthcare sector. So nobody's better than positioned than physical therapists to help with that situation.
Yeah, to minimize and reduce those stays.
Right.
And another kind of coming back around also to our environment. I mean, we're preaching so much about activity and yet our poor students are sitting in class 9 to 5 all day and they come in all fit and they leave our programs, you know, with back pain. And I think that Sean has a real passion around saying, let's, as students, what do we do for our students now to promote a healthy, some wellness around our curriculum? Do you want to share a little bit about some of those?
Yeah. That's all right, though. And so actually part of what we did as a sustainability committee is we held a sustainability event for the first year students who are just now entering to give them some ideas on how to incorporate fitness into their busy 8-to-5 schedules. And I think this approach also applies to how we treat our patients later on down the road is we don't just want to prescribe 3 sets of 10 of something because that's not fun or exciting. And it's really about how do you incorporate activity into your daily routine, whether it's at a city or community level or just on your way to class. Where do you park? Do you take the stairs or do you take the elevators? And fitness is just one aspect of it. We also talked about nutrition and sleep hygiene because so many of us, we're in our early to mid 20s and we might know how to cook your basic meals. We're not the best at it. And so we taught some of the students strategies on how to meal prep so you can prep once or twice a week and have healthier foods that you can eat throughout the week rather than wait until you're hungry and going to grab some fast food.
So one of the things just to pull back and to reflect back on both of their comments is that that sustainability event night was, we have a sustainability committee and through the Piedmont Project, I was charged to create some ways in which we incorporate these sustainability concepts in our curriculum. But what was difficult is also being able to just introduce each new class to what some of the previous classes have been doing and their impact on the program. And so Eric and Sean and some of the other folks in their committee actually got together and we collectively wrote a grant and got a for the Center for Faculty Development and Excellence and got a mini classroom grant that supported that evening event. But what it supported was also bringing in a regional director of Georgia Organics who came and spoke about organic farming and organic foods, sustainable, you know, farm to table and sustainable concepts around food and nutrition. And it's sort of a takeaway is there's a CSA, a community supported agriculture group that delivers to Emory. And so like giving awareness to students that they could just sign up for the CSA and get vegetables delivered weekly. So then I think that, again, they are trying to, so how do we take this and improve our program? And so when I look back at some of the goals for this involvement is to teach students to think on an individual level, what can you do to shift your own personal lifestyles from a sustainability concept, whether it is related to recycling or if it's related to sustainable agriculture or health and wellness and exercise, or but then also think about what are their suggestions on a departmental level? How can we change some of our practices? So the food kind of came from the fact that oftentimes we might use a cheaper route and just order pizza for the students for in-service, right? It's free food, but is that really the healthy food? So they pioneered, you know, going to the store and getting healthier options and salads for that particular night as an example. And then thinking on a community level, that might be around how you might structure a clinic and then using these concepts that way. And then on a professional level, what is our obligation as a society along these lines? And when you mentioned earlier about being a political advocate, and I wonder if thinking about language that says engage citizenship, right? Because it's when it's that way, what is it that concepts of what does citizenship mean? And that is each of our responsibility to support society, right? And this engaged citizenship is something that I think for me prompts this effort up in a supportive, integrative manner.
Yeah, it sounds like, just talking the talk is fine, but you got to walk the walk. And that's what you guys have been able to do there, which is saying, okay, we say these things, and then maybe, okay, let's take an honest look at ourselves. Maybe we don't do all of those things we talk about, but let's start. Let's start working towards that.
I'd like to actually add something about the fall event that we held. It was actually quite successful that about, 20% of the class afterwards came down and talked to us and asked us how to get involved. And we have a class of 75 plus individuals. And so part of the next step we're taking is setting up a cooking class with our campus chef to actually get us together and cook together and prep the food together to teach us about basic balance, nutrition, meals, and get us together and have a different relationship with food.
Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though, with that walk the walk is the big thing we're trying to do.
And I've been really, I want to put a plug in for the initial students who helped with this idea, and they helped get grant funding to start our website. And I'll let Eric talk a little bit more about it, but because he's done, you know, his group is, and Sean, they've done all this wonderful work around revising it. But in 2016, a group of students and I applied to our sustainability office to get funds for this website and to be really a scholarly archive for this work around that. And one of their initiatives was looking at the time, all of our classes, we gave printed handouts for each lecture. And they're like, well, we don't need to do that.
It's a lot of trees.
It's a lot of trees. And I said, well, then that's a great point. So why don't you put together a presentation and present it to the faculty and see what their thoughts. So I was so impressed, and they were very professional, and they truly made the case, not only with regards to the environment, but with regards to costs and finance. And they calculated how much paper we produced and the cost of it, the impact on trees, and it was brilliant. And so because of their initiatives, we went totally green. It was a bit of adjustment of the students and the faculty as well, because you have to think about how do you take notes and, sure. and the writing versus typing. And we were really proud of being unplugged in class, and this meant having computers. So what I thought was beautiful about it was not only that they really helped shift culture in our program that was pretty significant, but also had to work collaboratively with faculty, with other students, get their buy-in, this whole process evaluation, run into some complex areas around pedagogy that we were really concerned about and really navigate through that. So again, it kind of came back to what are some of those important skills of complex problem solving that and collaborative integration of that of ideas that are really essential to address these broader concepts from a societal standpoint, like sustainability and climate change.
Yeah, good on you. I mean, when you start multiplying the, I don't know how many things I printed out in PT school, and you start multiplying by 75 students per class and three classes, that's, you know, that's a lot. Or, you know, just taking a look at 75, next thing you know, if you go, if you look how big of a city it is, it's 750, 7,500, 75,000 people doing something similar. If you can make a small change somewhere along that line, it can add up quick.
And if the previous students actually calculated how much it was per class, and for 3 years per class, it cost our program $300,000 and killed 10 trees.
Hold on a second. Just to print out notes, say those numbers again.
So to print out notes for all 3 years for every student, so per class, by the time they graduated, it cost over $300,000 and about 10 trees.
Wow. I'm sure the university was pretty excited about that, to not having to not have to spend that.
I think that's one of the big reasons that change got approved is,
wow,
you know, our director saw that, you know, we'd be saving that much money by making that change, and that was a really powerful thing.
And if you really want to go full circle, right, my background's in communications. You start by bringing in different backgrounds to be able to leverage something you want to do. You figured out how to talk to someone in their language, right? When you talk to someone whose job it is to save money, and you explain very simply how you can save the money, I'm sure they were glad to save some trees, but I'm pretty sure that the other kind of paper they were excited to save was a little bit greener.
Yeah, and for sure. And that's one of the big things about sustainability. One thing they tell us in our business class in our program is that there's no money, there's no mission. So we need to be able to come up with innovative business practices that allow us to incorporate, you know, a lot of these social and environmental initiatives. And a lot of times they match up. A lot of times helping the environment helps the community and it saves money. But other times, you know, you have to be a little bit more creative.
Yep. Yeah. It's not ever going to get any easier, right? Just going to have to get more and more creative. Where could we get some more information about what you were just talking about?
So you can get more information at our Greening Emory DPT website. That kind of lays out our vision for what we're trying to accomplish and the cultural change we're trying to make, both within our DPT program and on a larger societal and healthcare level.
And where could someone come across that? What's the easiest way for them to find that?
GreeningEmoryDPT.org, or you can go through our Emory DPT website, division website, and it's linked there as well.
Stand by.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the PT Pinecast.
Be a leader in advancing patient outcomes with the APTA's Physical Therapy Outcomes Registry. You can leverage your EHR data to benchmark outcomes without added data entry. That's right. There's no additional work. You'll be able to optimize your practice with easy-to-use reports, market your practice to patients, payers, and referring physicians, and maximize payment. It's the only nationwide registry building integrations for PT practices, regardless of what EHR you have. Sign up for a demo now at ptoutcomes.com/go.
That's ptoutcomes.com/go.
The Physical Therapy Outcomes Registry, brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
Do you want to say thanks to our sponsors, Arias Medical Staffing? Quite simply, they find physical therapists jobs all over the country. Maybe they'll have some solutions about sustainability, since they find PTs jobs in all 50 states in all settings. Check them out online at AUREUSmedical.com. I know some people were talking online, some questions about how do you find housing? You know, if you take an assignment somewhere else and it's for 13 weeks, how do you find that housing? How do you get a license in a different state? What about CEUs? Do they transfer? What goes on there? Aureus has an entire staff. They're not just recruiters. They can walk you through this process. They've been doing this thing for decades, so they got you hooked up. Again, it's AUREUSmedical.com. All 50 states, they'll get you doing the thing you want to do, which is treat people in this amazing field of physical therapy where you want to do it. And you get to travel around. It's kind of like working on vacation. So check them out at AUREUSmedical.com. So the last thing we do on the show, guys, is the parting shot.
This is the parting shot.
Brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offers continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding student internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what the IHL can do for you and support your professional development. Go to brooksihl.org.
Okay, so that gives you guys an opportunity to have a mic drop moment, a last sentiment to leave with the audience. So we'll give everybody an opportunity for a quick parting shot. If you were to say one thing on this topic to the audience listening tonight, one thing they should do going forward to keep close to their heart, what would it be?
I think I would say that as physical therapists, we're a lot more powerful than sometimes we think. And so it's not unusual for me to think big about what it is that we can do. And though it might seem surprising that we can have a huge impact on climate change, in fact, it is well in keeping and a good match for our knowledge and skill sets.
Love that. Think big. Who wants to go next?
I think the biggest thing for me that I want people to remember, it's about cultural change. It's not just a list of to-dos like, oh, I need to recycle now. I need to not print out this piece of paper. Oh, I need to go exercise. It's really about creating a culture that helps everybody's well-being and getting buy-in from that. I think that is a much more powerful vision than just putting more things on the to-do list.
Love that. Now it's smart. It's what we strive for, right? Making a change in someone's daily life is going to have a bigger impact on just convincing them to work out a couple times for us. That's great. Who's up next?
You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of your patients. And so do what you preach and lead and be that example you want to see in your patients.
Love that. All right, Sarah, means you're the closer. What do you got for us?
Coming back to anchoring and seeing, understanding the individual in the context of their environment and the broader implications about what that really means.
Love it. Do you want to reference the article one more time? If you're a member of the APTA, this was delivered to you, but you can also find it online. It is PT Emotion, the September 2018 edition. This was on page 36. Again, the title of the article, Climate Change Called the Primary Threat to Population Health. Rose, appreciate you taking some time out. And Sarah, Sean, and Eric, thanks for jumping in from down in Atlanta to talk with us about this.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Hey guys, the Movement Maestro here, letting you know that Rock Tape is so much more than just a tape company. We are a movement company. Move stronger, longer with the world's best kinesiology tape, topical pain relief, mobility equipment, and protective gear. But that's not all. Learn from the best with our industry-leading continuing education courses. Want 20% off your first product purchase? Head on over to shop.rocktape.com and use the code PTPINECAST. Again, for the folks in the back, that's shop.rocktape.com and enter the code PTPINECAST. Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape, the movement industry's new standard for education.
The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Travis Mills Foundation. On April 10th, 2012, United States Army Staff Sergeant Travis Mills of the 82nd Airborne was critically injured on his third tour of duty in Afghanistan by an IED while on patrol, losing portions of both legs and both arms. He is one of only 5 quadruple amputees from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to survive his injuries. Thanks to his amazing strength, courage, and incredible will to live, the heroic actions of the man in his unit, the prayers of thousands, and all the healthcare providers at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, Travis remains on the road to recovery. He founded the Travis Mills Foundation, a nonprofit organization formed to benefit and assist combat injured veterans. Travis lives by his motto, never give up, never quit. To support the Travis Mills Foundation or to find out more, visit travismills.org. From the makers of this podcast comes a brand new show. It's called NPTE StudyCast. If you're studying for the NPTE, this is the show you need to listen to, period. Short, sweet, and to-the-point episodes from board-certified clinical specialists and physical therapy professors on all the topics you need to know to take the NPTE. NPTE StudyCast, available now on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more.
NPTE StudyCast,
the number one NPTE podcast
in the world.